Good morning. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 4341-790 is our contact number. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862. You can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. John Stout, our technical operator, producer for today's program. I'm Dennis Johnson, your host. We go until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Just north of opportunity, just south of frustration. That's my coordinates at times, and I think perhaps it's the coordinates of Barbados at times as well. To prepare for this program, I read newspapers over and over, sometimes four or five times a day, various newspapers, Caribbean newspapers, those from overseas that I care to pay attention to. And I have to tell you, see opportunities, but there's a lot of frustration. And sometimes my frustration spills over into what I say on the radio. Today's newspaper, I will just use three examples that have jumped at me. On the front page of today's Nation, there's a story that says NIS alert, right under a picture of workers, some 200 of them who have been severed from a company in Barbados asking to be paid. And the NIS alert quotes actuarial consultant at Ecla Limited, who says, among other things, that there's pressure on the national insurance scheme. Well, of course, if you have, especially because of COVID, more people taking funds out, less people in the workforce contributing to, like a savings account, that will happen. But here's the thing. It quotes the lady as saying, there needs to be improvement in terms of the governance with respect to national insurance as well as the publication of information on a timely basis. It is really crucial that the 2020 actuarial valuation of the National Insurance Scheme be done as soon as possible and be made publicly available. That lack of information, I might add, has been ongoing. I remember Tony Marshall, the former talk show host and one-time member of the board of the NIS, making comments about the lack of timely reports, and the NIS is not the only organization that suffers from that. The story continues on page 4 of the Nation, saying other things that the lady says. But right above that story was the second one that caused my frustration again. It quotes the governor of the Central Bank of Barbados in that same discussion, saying that recovery, according to the headline, in quotes, unlikely before 2022. And I read the whole report, and then I went searching, because on the 28th of October, the central bank governor said this in a review of the economy for the first 9 months of the year.
The bank anticipates that following the double-digit decline in economic growth in 2020, the Barbados economy will rebound gradually in 2021. However, the extent of the recovery will depend on several factors, including the effectiveness of policy measures in spurring a revival. Barbados's tourism planners anticipate a pickup in airlift in the current quarter and a return to near normalcy in 2021. By November, most hotels and restaurants expect to reopen to accommodate an upturn in arrivals, but the recovery of cruise tourism is likely to be further delayed as scheduled calls continue to be postponed. However, the persistence of COVID-19 infections in our main source markets and the uncertainty associated with travel protocols are likely to prevent a full return to 2019 levels by 2021.
Right. Now, here's my thing. The governor of the central bank made certain predictions based on certain information he had at that time. And he said, and I'm quoting the newspaper here, at the bank, we recognize that forecasting in the current environment has a higher margin of error than normal. Okay. So who asked what is likely to be the effect now that we know that COVID is expanding in the US, Europe is locking down, airports are closing, schools are going, some places are talking about lockdown again. Do we have a new projection? But we print stories without analysis and cross-checking. I am seeing nothing in this newspaper that said anybody checked with the NIS to find out if the actuarial consultants' concerns are genuine, whether there is a response, whether there's likely to be a response soon, whether the information will be given within a short space of time. Where are we on it? There is no analysis. And because there is no analysis and no review and no cross-checking, the public arrives at various conclusions based on what they see as the headline. And then you'll have people calling the program and saying, so wait, I ain't gonna get my pension. People worrying about, you know, if they ain't see the postman, whether it's the postman, the sick, or the NIS have no money. And then anxiety spreads and you have the relevant misinformation that then you have to walk back. That's the frustration that I feel. And I'll save my last for this one, because this is one of my favorite ones. On page 9, a letter to the editor states, signed by Philip Hunt, "Tough Keeping Prices Down" is the headline. He says, "There is a definite role for the Fair Trading Commission in helping to regulate and regularize prices." I want to know where that came from, because I read the whole act and I didn't see anything about that in the Fair Trading Act. It says advertising, it says false advertising, it says contracts. I see nothing about prices. And on page 13, that same FTC says, in a paid notice, "The Fair Trading Commission has concluded its investigation into the nationwide electricity outages of November 18th and 19th, 2019, and completed its findings report on the factors which contributed to the events." Good. But here is what it says. "Due to the commercially sensitive nature of information contained in the document, the full findings report will not be published." Commercially sensitive to whom? The consuming public or the Barbados Light and Power Company? And who determines that it's commercially sensitive? And who determines that I can't see it? But I paying you, I think. So when we have people who do not know what the Fair Trading Commission Act says, they then believe it's a consumer protection organization that could protect them from rising prices. And that, my friends, is where opportunity clashes with my frustration. Took longer than I usually do with these. I don't like to take this long, because people will say they then have 15 minutes to answer and all sorts of other things. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Glenn.
This is Glenn Murray.
I got the voice.
I feel your passion. I sense your pain, but I am tempted to digress. But then sometimes we'll come back to it. I mean, very perceptive, very perceptive conclusions you've come to today. Very, very analytical, very, very strongly done. And I'll come back on Tuesday when you're on again and deal with that.
Cause no,
I want to deal with some of the, right, mm-hmm. But very good. You're bang on. It's very, very refreshing. What I want to talk about, last time you were on air with Vendor Canada, probably it was Tuesday.
It was Tuesday of this week, yes. Sir.
Seems longer than Tuesday, it is only Thursday. So y'all had a very, very productive, very informative, very rich discussion on culture and cultural activities in Barbados. Which I could have joined them, but they couldn't. But there was a couple of things that mentioned, one in particular I want to take up. Mm-hmm. There was a discussion of the no longer hanging of the portraits of the 10 national heroes
on the side of the Treasury building.
I used to be dead. Mm-hmm. I too have missed that. I thought it brought a sense of presence and dignity, you know, and to the society in color. You knew that something big was happening in Barbados when you passed and saw those pictures, those portraits hanging on the wall. But the thing is that the reason why they're not hanging is that, and this is something I discovered when I used to basically be in charge of the community independence celebration, the national independence celebration, and look to do that again. The creators of those portraits, the artists who drew those, only allowed them to be used for a limited period of time. Right?
I'm glad you said that, and I'll tell you why when you finish. Go ahead.
So that is why you no longer see them, and why they suddenly went off the scene. It's not because of any indifference or negligence on the part of anybody in government or any government agencies involved. It's just that they know they're called to control their manage their intellectual property and their rights within those portraits, and they were given for a limited name. Maybe it comes to a point now where some other arrangement can be made with them, where they can be approached again for another extended period or buy them and preserve them for posterity. But that is something that the policymakers will have to do. But I miss them. I miss them. And I would like to see them higher again, you know.
I'm glad you made that comment, Glenn, for another reason. Yeah, either yesterday, I think, when I was producing the program, I saw a WhatsApp message from someone who said that they hoped that the presentation done by young Cindy Celeste would be played more often during the month of November. And I said to the person, you have to understand that even public performances done under the aegis of the National Cultural Foundation, for example, Pick of the Crop finals and other things like that,
right,
the artist signs sometimes a limited contract that says how many times you can repeat their performance because they have performance rights associated with it. And even the band members, backup singers, you know, the drummer here and there, these people are part of it. So I'm glad you mentioned the fact that the, you know, the portraits are being hung with the permission of the persons who did it, because sometimes we don't respect the artistic rights of people who prepare work. I know this station got into trouble for repeating a NIFCA performance by someone. It wasn't the performer who made the complaint. It was the writer of the piece who said, I haven't given anybody permission to reproduce my piece, you know, other than the person who did it at NIFCA. So you can't just play it anytime you feel like it or use it for your purposes. So that part of how we treat artistic expression, I thought was important. Thank you. Thank you for saying so.
Hello, before we go, there are a couple of things I want to say before we go. Mm-hmm. One is that in connection with the same national heroes, I for some time have been bemoaning the fact that we still have not, after 22 years, national heroes came into existence in 1998, we still have not devised and compiled and created and imagined a consistent, coherent program of substance that can, that stand for them, you know, give meaning to their presence and the whole question of the creation of national heroes. Right now, national heroes are almost like just another bank holiday. Now, you think we have to go back to the drawing board and come with a substantial amount of performances, actors, drama, to make it mean, seem significant. And it has artistic value, it has commercial value, it has tourism view value. If you can market that at a particular time of year, they have this peripheral, a wide array of activities around national heroes, I think. And it also had create a great awareness among the populace that what our national hero, not just a name you hear in November, National Heroes Day time. And we have to get back to, like you said, and make that meaningful. In addition, I would like to suggest that the Treasury Building, which I know is carried for creation of housing, I still don't understand how you can put housing there. You have to reconfigure that to accommodate housing would be a tremendously expensive undertaking, but I don't know any more of these things. You know, you get snippets of information, like you said, and there's no follow through. But I think I would like, I'd like to suggest that the Treasury Building, which is still seems to be a structurally sound building, be converted into a full National Heroes Gallery. I mean, you have some accommodation in the Parliament Building, but if you can expand that and make it meaningful, let it stand out. That will bring people into town. That will bring school children. If you want to talk about reviving Bridgetown, you can't move everyone to Bridgetown. De-accelerate what's happening in Bridgetown, expecting people to have a vibrant city. So I said, turn that probably just needs to be reconfigured on the inside, and turn it into interactive sessions. Not only national heroes, some of our parliamentarians, give it meaning then. Mm-hmm. Or you've got the space that's a ready-made building, rather than demolish it to create housing for a certain section of people called, I don't know, if it's going to be commercial, you have to be quite wealthy to be able to afford an apartment there.
I chuckle at that because I would prefer to see, I'm sorry, I keep saying so, because every time I pass it, I can't help but notice. London-born Towers is a wonderful seafront condominium complex. If the ugly buildings on the other side of the road that they serve no purpose are knocked out. And I don't mean the one with Lobster Alive. I mean the other empty yellow-looking thing next to it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a seafront property if there's nothing on the other side. The gas station is gone. That's an open space. I mean, there's a gentleman who calls this program who agitates a lot of people with his tone. But I had to agree with him when he said it is really nice driving down Bay Street and looking at empty space that used to be, you know, where the heart is supposed to go, and looking at the sea and the yacht. So it is rather relaxing to someone like me who like boats. But, you know. I'm only saying.
Yeah, I come back to another question, but I just want to make one other point on a different subject.
Mm-hmm.
I heard last week it was the CEO of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, Mrs. Juliet
Bynoe-Sutherland,
saying that the workers, the frontline workers at the hospital are going to be given a hazard allowance. Now, that reminded me of a call I'd been making the very early, when I first began to understand the complexity and the insidious nature of the virus. I said quite early, and people were being praised and clapped for their performance, the frontline workers. I said, let's not give them just claps and cheers and comment, the verbal combination, but at some point give them a financial reward. We can't pay them overtime. We will never be able to afford it. Give them financial reward. And I think it should be the equal sum go to everybody should get the doctors, the anesthetics, everybody involved should get the same pay because it's a national service, right?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't accord to any hierarchy, development status and rank, etc. Same pay, all right? And I feel it should go to all of them. And I would like, therefore, to think that what is being done by the QES board should be extended by the government to the whole service. When the time comes, and not too long from now, people have suffered, right? In addition, I think it should be tax-free. I don't think they should work, but work hard, work overtime.
And then pay taxes.
And it can be done because I remember in 1979 or 80, Tom Adams, who was the Minister for Finance, the late Prime Minister Tom Adams, we had a tax-free month. He was making adjustments to tax bans. I remember it well because I'd never seen so much money in my hand yet. all that was taken out was national insurance.
Right.
But I feel for this one, we should make a special example. Just give the person involved a lump sum of money, whatever sum it is, the same across the board, tax-free.
Tax-free and say thank you. Thank you for the hard work. Yeah.
Right. And at the same time, I want to repeat my call for, at the end of that, it should be given a tangible, durable award, a medal of some kind that can be passed on to posterity for this incredibly unique event. We had these people paying their price, and I even suggested to somebody a defender of Barbados or something like that. But I just think that is what I think that we have to look at.
Makes sense to me, Glenn, especially when we see that almost the entire population of Barbados wiped out in deaths in the United States, 250,000. That used to be a population at one point. Well, Mayor, thank you, Glenn. Good to have you starting us off today with that discussion, and look forward to chatting with you on other things when next you call. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hey, morning, Dennis.
Hey.
Hey, Gerard, what's good here?
Hey, Gerard, how are you, sir?
Hey, good, how are you, man?
Trying to be good. What's up?
You're a hard man. You're a hard man to find, but anyhow, it's
so I keep hearing.
I tried to get into you. I think, well, I realized you were the moderator, so I didn't worry. But I wanted to speak specifically to you because in yesterday's paper, page 19, there's an article with the heading, Garrison Truck Suffers Damage. And it was written by Mark Goodrich Boyce. Now, I got a call yesterday, a WhatsApp telling me, look what you're going to do. So I left work at 5:30 and I ventured to my spot at the garrison and they walked the track to see what, not to see what was done because they knew what was done, it was there on Saturday, but I wanted to see the after effects. And I plan to respond to Miss, well, I'm not sure if it's a man or female, but Mrs. Boyce, Goodrich Boyce, because they said the racetrack at the garrison Savannah has been damaged as a result of last Saturday's racing, air falling rain. No, that's not totally accurate. Yes, there was racing, there was rain, but I really want to say that there was an authority responsible for the damage to this track. And the article goes on to say that, you know, it will not be no additional cost to repair the track. That is utter nonsense. Now, I live behind the garrison, just like you, Dennis. I've been following horse racing about 53 years or less. Oh, 53, 54.
About that.
Kind of the little boy with Johnny Bell taking his bike and getting it free and stuff. Because Johnny Bell used to live at me. My house was a boarding house for Johnny.
And used to bite the horse neck and cuss, but okay, go ahead.
Oh, so you understand. Eat horse and everything.
Yeah, I know.
Was a groom sort of dabbling ownership of horses, always at risk.
Very colorful character.
I stood up there when I got there on Saturday to be told that races was delayed by an hour and that there's no way they will run the last race. Yet, to my horror, the last race was run in total darkness.
Yeah.
Right? That's the first thing. But not only that, when I watched the races, the subsequent races, I had to ask one of the jockeys if they were on a go slow. And I made a call to the grandstand to a friend who was watching it from the other end, because I am now watching it from by the 9, he's in the grandstand. I said, what's going on? He said, man, don't complain. The track really bad.
Dangerous.
And it holding. So these fellas could the horse isn't even able to get back to finish. So I say all that to say this. When the jockeys rode the first or the second race and had qualms about racing on Saturday, the stewards and the director should have stopped horse racing. But you know why? And didn't give the reason, and this person may not be familiar with horse racing. Didn't give any full reason. Saturday was Pinnacle Feed Day. It was a sponsored day.
And they don't want to lose the sponsorship?
Thank you. So you're catching at the money to gain the sponsorship whilst you're damaging the track. And know what I'm seeing?
And endangering the horses and those
involved. You know what I'm seeing? You know what this article is telling me? Because through the grapevine, you're hearing that there's this big thing planned for independence.
Midnight racing.
And the Prime Minister wants all these things to happen. Yes, good for tourism. Very good for tourism.
Is it?
But as I know it, and I think you know it just as good as me because you lived out there for a while. If the water is running off of the road, as it has been for the last couple of weeks, and settling all along the 4th, along the way, I get to about 5:30, and I walk the track. And there were water in some of the holes that are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a long, big set of rainfall over since Saturday. So I am saying that...
But they had improved the drainage at one point, and they had done all sorts of things with... You see, part of the problem, I think, as well, my friend, is the fact that to try to get the grass to grow to the level it was to have the first race day, the track was also watered regularly. And then plus the rain we've had.
But I missed the part, didn't I?
Which part?
Let me tell you. So after, because I watched the World Cup, and then we had COVID,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
After the shutdown, well, just after the World Cup.
The closing, yeah.
And the shutdown,
mm-hmm.
there... rotivated the track. Anybody mm-hmm. know farming, understand me? They put their plow on the track
yeah.
and plowed
it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Left it for a while, too.
They had some issues with the shutdown because I live next to people who's worked with their club. So they had some issues where, because of the shutdown, you couldn't go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And there were articles talking about not being able to get the grass planted and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what is the mistake that I think the turf club made, and anybody around horse racing will tell you? They never rolled the track. So you pick out the rocks, you level it out, your plant grass, you get the rainfall, and the grass
grows
and you never roll the track. Yeah. So the track underneath is hollow.
It's soft. Yeah.
So every time the rain falls, until you allow this grass to take root, and it's going to take about a year, but they had to rush the race. So now you're destroying the track. I know it's reminding me of Dennis, and I will leave you on this. When a former prime minister wrote off $19 million in taxes to the turf club. And I've said then, and I was saying, then when it was done, that it should have been conditions mm-hmm. that would have changed this from a turf club, a racing club, because that's why it's a club. A group mm-hmm. of men getting together
yeah.
to a racing authority with rules, set rules and conditions. Until we get to that stage, we are spinning thought in mud, yeah. and we can end up spending more money on the track. And I'm very grateful. And nobody didn't get injured on Saturday.
Yeah, that's
but what they did on Saturday was really ridiculous as an employer, putting those youngsters to race on that track. And now the damage is there.
Done. Again, as someone who grew up in that area, I can tell you that one of the things I think people who haven't been around the garrison for a long while, John up there is a former jockey, and he can tell you about hurting himself and what he had to do to maintain his weight. I don't think people understand the extent of the racing industry We simply see it from the end point, which is horses that are imported and owners who stand with trophies when they win it. But the grooms and those others who work to make race days what they are seem to be fading into the distance. I will say this about the garrison. I remember in 1970 or 72, somewhere between 70 and 74 for sure, perhaps it was 72, getting old. There was a depression, tropical depression, that passed close to Barbados and dumped a lot of water. Tracked it at the Met Institute in Husbands in St. James with a gentleman by the name of Harkus Charles and his sons. And when we left Husbands to come back to the garrison, couldn't figure out why, you know, we were dodging and ducking all over the place because I was a youngster then. When we got to Bridgetown, there were fishing boats sitting right where Chaffet is today, on next to Nelson. Fishing boats were actually up on the Careenage. And when we got to the garrison was waist deep in water. I mean, waist deep at my age then seemed to be I was about to drown walking from 14 Bush Hill to the other side. But the garrison takes a lot of water. As you say, it comes down Dyer's Road and falls from the heavens. And I don't know there's been any extensive drainage done. It rains a little bit, and if you pass in front of George Washington House, there's a swimming pool there still, days afterwards. So it means that there are drainage issues at the garrison. So I agree with you. The running on the track and looking at what's happened there, I see replanting, retooling. I don't know if night racing is going to come off in time for independence, but if we say our soldiers and our unarmed units can't march on the garrison when it rains, we put them down on the dock. We can have horse racing on the garrison. Horses are a lot heavier than people marching. But anyhow, they did it, and we paid the price. Or they paid the price, and perhaps they'll get another tax relief. And by the way, just by the way, what happened with Independence Day? I know we scaled back Remembrance Day. What's happening with Independence Day? Full military parade, reduced military parade, COVID restrictions in place. I know the Chief Justice might get knighted, because our Chief Justices are usually knighted.